Hello, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is an informational program featuring vegan music, news, events, and interviews about the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide, manifesting a paradigm of peace, egalitarianism, sustainability, abundance, and health for all. Freedom worldwide. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. We're very fortunate to be joined by Scott in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Scott is a peace pilgrim and a vegan activist. Welcome, Scott, and thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Hey, Marlene. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I am excited to hear about what you've been up to all these years, from Tennessee to Stuttgart, Germany, and now we're back in Tennessee, and
That's
the
right.
Peace Pilgrim, and there's so much. So can you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'll try to keep it concise. I don't know, when was the last time? I've been on your program once before. It was years ago. I don't remember how long ago it's been, but basically, about 18 years ago, I was in a period of heavy searching. I had reached a kind of a dead end in my life and knew there was more to it, you know, and decided to go to a remote location. And I spent about 2 years radically testing truth and putting all of these wonderful platitudes that we've been taught as kids to the real test. You know, love your enemy and give even when you have nothing in your wallet and, you know, be courageous even in dangerous times, be kind to people who don't deserve it. All these wonderful moral lessons we're taught, but we're always taught somehow to make exceptions in extreme cases. And I wanted to see if they really worked. So long story short, after about 2 years of testing them, I found out that they actually do work, no matter how extremely they're tested, and they actually work more effectively the more extremely they're applied and courageously they're applied. And so I decided to become a peace pilgrim, primarily because it seemed the only way that I could effectively get this important message of kindness and justice and compassion across to people. You know, if you walk around and you raise your flag and say, hey, I've got a better idea, people tend not to listen. And yet, if you just live an unusual life with, I have no money, I have almost no personal possessions, I have no home, I have no car, I have no phone, and I never ask for money or use money, I just walk around smiling, trying to serve everyone else all day long, every day. And it's such an unusual life, people tended to come to me and ask me what I'm doing and why. And that opened the door for some real conversation. And so I've been basically flowing from city to city all over the world for the past 18 years, almost 18 years now. And the last 13 of those years, in fact, tomorrow is my 10-year veganiversary. Tomorrow is the official one. I actually went vegan sometime in May of 2013, but the first time I officially championed the vegan cause publicly was June 16th, 2013. And so I've been coupling veganism with my peace pilgrim activism for the last 10 years, which, of course, the two are one. You can't really champion justice and compassion and decency and love if you're also paying other people to torture innocent beings. It just doesn't work. So I'm very, very thankful that I woke up 10 years ago to the animal agriculture industry and have been championing the not only kindness towards humans, but justice and compassion towards animals ever since. And that's kind of what I've been doing.
Thank you, Scott. Beautiful, beautiful and powerful. Yeah, let's bring it back to when you were in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that interview and that you shared with us how even in the small town in Germany, I think it was a car manufacturing community that you lived in?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I've been in Germany twice, but this most recent I lived in Germany from 1993 to 2003, the first stint. But this recent, more powerful visit, I was invited back to visit family and friends in late 2011, and ended up staying. I was offered a job by my old employers for my first visit, and they work in the industrial part of Stuttgart. They have an electronic engineering firm. And I used to moonlight for them way back before I was a peace pilgrim, before I was vegan, years and years and years ago. And they asked me to stay and help them out again. And no one else had asked me to go anywhere or do anything. So I just said, yes. It was another seven years until it was time to go. So I stayed there for 7 years and had a really interesting time trying to spread the vegan message. I went vegan, actually, during that visit. So I woke up to veganism in 2013, went vegan pretty much overnight, and spent a significant portion of those last 5 years in Germany trying in vain. Well, it's not always, but trying valiantly to get people to go vegan. It was difficult, as you probably well know. But that was really interesting. Yeah. Do you want me to talk more about that, or?
Well, that was our last interview, so you were telling us how even in the small town, there was finding a lot of vegan products in the stores, so that was a start.
Right.
And we know that's just a small part of veganism, very small
part.
Yeah,
my activism was really interesting. I called it, I still call it, amusingly, the Great Milk War that I fought with my coworkers and bosses for those last 5 years. And when I went vegan, it just blew me away. When I just, to this day, I'm just still astounded. I mean, I was an ethical vegetarian, which of course we know is an oxymoron. There's no such thing as an ethical vegetarian, but we're taught that it's ethical to be vegetarian, that if you just stop eating meat, you're doing something moral, because no one is taught. I was never taught what the dairy and egg industries actually do to these animals, and for good reason, right? Because it's horrific. And so I was so shocked by it when I first woke up to it that I was immediately compelled to start talking to people and trying to get them informed, thinking they would immediately say, oh, right, I'll stop doing that too. And that didn't happen, which was really interesting. I mean, I understand it. Dairy is incredibly addictive, and cultural norms are really powerful. And I get how difficult it is to be able to break free and just do the right thing, even when you've been taught that the wrong thing is okay, or other people are doing the wrong thing and pressuring you to yourself to keep doing the wrong thing. I shouldn't say wrong. I'd like a harmful, violent, needlessly cruel thing. And so I started by just walking around to my coworkers for about a year, just giving them pamphlets and talking to them. And they would ask questions. Why are you not eating the cake that Sarah brought Scott? And I'd be like, well, let me tell you what's in that cake, you know, and I would have all these conversations, and people were interested, but it was uncomfortable for them. And they shut that down pretty quickly. And then I worked in the warehouse portion of this business. So I was responsible for giving my bosses would, one of the perks of the job was free coffee. And so my bosses would buy these cases, just like 10 cases at a time, just liters and liters and liters of this low quality milk. And they would be stacked up in the warehouse. And one of my jobs was whenever anyone came and needed a new milk for the coffee machine, I had to give them the milk. So that didn't sit well. So I boycotted that job and raised a big stink, and that got a big conversation going. And then I decided, I'll print out stickers and I'll color the stickers, these really vivid kind of gross stickers in German. And I printed them out on my own dime, and I just covered these milk cartons with all these graphic stickers of what was actually inside the milk, so that when people got the milk and were pouring it into their coffee, they would come face to face with the truth. And that, as you can imagine, went over very poorly. And I was told under no circumstances was I allowed to do that anymore. And so then I moved to actually spending my own money. I gave all my money away anyway, because as a peace pilgrim, I wasn't allowed to have any. So I bought vegan food just enough to get by, and the rest of it I gave away to friends, family, and homeless people. But because otherwise the Germans would have kicked me out. I had to have a job. But I dedicated some more of my money to actually buying oat milk, and I would bring oat milk in. I'd tell my friends, hey, here, it's really great. You know, just put this in your coffee instead. I did that. And so then it became clear as things were wrapping up that it was time to leave Germany. I crumpled up thousands and thousands of paper balls, and I threw them on top of this little, the warehouse was really tall, but inside the warehouse, there was this little room, encapsulated room, a packaging room. And so I took over months and months and months, I just threw thousands and thousands of paper balls on top of the roof of this building. And then I put right before I left, I put this huge sign on the wall and said, you know, this monument is a tribute to all of the cows that have died. Each paper ball represents one cow that has been killed by the milk consumption of this company. You know, I made it kind of dramatic, and it was fun. And it's still there to this day. They haven't been able to get it down, which was kind of cool. So I just had some contact with an ex-coworker just the other day. He says, it's still there, man. It's still there. And the last thing I did is I kind of commandeered 100 milk cartons steadily over time, papered them with those stickers. And then when I left, I hid them all over the firm. So they had to go looking for them. And not only was the last one found 3 years later, just recently, but they saved one of them and they have kept it up front, apparently, at the entrance where the clients walk in. They have this beautiful little trophy case where all their machines they've developed are there, kind of showing them off. And right there in the middle, they've saved one of my milk cartons, and they have it in their trophy case. You know, we can't do a lot, you know, and the industry is so powerful, and it's so ingrained, and it can be so frustrating, but we can all do something, you know. And I like to think it did some good. It seems as though I think it's possible one or two of my coworkers have gone vegan because of it. It's unclear at the moment, but I like to think so.
Yes. And why do you think they put that in the trophy case?
You know, it doesn't, knowing what I know about them, you know, and I've known these guys off and on for 20 years. So, and we were used to be very, very close friends, and I still respect them, of course. And so I'm not exactly sure. I like to think it's because it was a really noble gesture that required it required a lot of courage to be constantly subtly threatened with termination, and to be able to champion the cause anyway. It's possible they respected that. That's the most positive interpretation. And so I kind of like to stick with that one.
That's what I was thinking.
It seems so. You know, they don't seem like the guys who would just callously make fun of it. I think they, both of them seem to be guys who do appreciate, at least as far as human interaction goes. They don't respect animals, but they do respect nobility and morality and kindness and justice amongst humans, you know. So it makes sense that there was some positive reason. You know, it's remarkable regardless, actually. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And how is it being back in Chattanooga, Tennessee?
Interesting. Really interesting. You know, there's always something to do. I mean, that's all I do all day, is I look for ways to help other people and serve other people. And of course, in this day and age, you don't got to look far. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I got back my last day of my walk. I walked from April to September of 2019. So near the end of 2019, I arrived in Chattanooga. And of course, just a few months later, COVID came, right? So I couldn't really walk a pilgrimage. I have no problems. I would have no problems walking again right now. There was that 2-year window when I really was just here and just was doing the best I could to spread the vegan message here. Which is difficult. I mean, online we always can, but you know, there wasn't much interpersonal interaction with neighbors and community members for quite a while there. So it was an interesting time. for a vegan activist, any activist, really.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah, it's really a shame, the agenda of the globalists and the detriment to humanity and, of course, all the animals as well.
Yep.
Yeah, so we got to keep at it because...
We got to keep at it.
Yeah,
no,
human
no
freedom.
No rest for the weary. We got to got to keep going.
Human freedom and world peace require animal liberation.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true.
We're listening to Scott, a peace pilgrim, currently based in Chattanooga, Tennessee. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Scott. We're listening to the music of Will and Madeline Tuttle, Beyond the Sky, from their album Inspiration. Welcome back from the break, and thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. We're continuing our conversation with Scott, a peace pilgrim, vegan activist. Human freedom and world peace require animal liberation.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. What is that quote? What does it say? Something about if we don't change, I forgot who said it, and they said it much more eloquently than I ever would, but it was, if we don't make a dramatic shift as a species, we will not survive, nor will we deserve to. And it sounds like hyperbole, but that is, you can take a little glance at the science, you know, economically, ecologically, politically, and we are right there. That is, it is the beginning of that being very, very true. And going vegan is critical to the viable survival of our species in any moral sense, in any moral iteration of who we have been called to be and can be as potential stewards of this planet. You know, we weren't called, or if you believe in calling, some people don't believe in that. We didn't evolve in our highest form to rape and pillage the planet and then get on spaceships and go rape and pillage the solar system or the galaxy. You know, we have the potential to be stewards of the same, caring stewards of the same. And that, if veganism is not tied to that, then it's just patently hypocritical and would lose, any stewardship would lose all of its power and viability. So veganism is the most important, in my opinion, this is my opinion, the most important cause by far of the day, though there are others that are worthy of attention. So
yes, thank you, Scott. And I believe that you truly embody the philosophy and the reality of authentic veganism, that it's compassion and courage and commitment and understanding. It's so beautiful.
It is.
You keep spreading this message year after year.
And it's going to be fun at some point, you know, and the next walk is calling. It was really fun on the walk back from Germany. I met thousands of people, of course, along the way. Anybody who's walking with the clothes on their back with no money tends to gather attention. And there were lots of different ways that I tried to spread the vegan message on the walk back. I took some stickers with me, and I would put stickers on park benches, and I would drop pamphlets in bus stops. And I'm a big fan of graffiti, and so I would I translated that famous Tolstoy quote. It sounds so much better in German than in English, but probably even better in Russian. But the one where he says, "As long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields." So I had that in all four languages, and I would write that. I would just took a Sharpie with me, and I would just graffiti my way along. But really the most powerful thing I did was just being hungry a lot of the time. And then when people offered me non-vegan food, very politely declining, even though it was obvious that I was hungry and had no means of procuring food myself. And so that was always really interesting. I think that was probably the most powerful thing I ever did on the walk. And people, you know, being inspired, going out of their way to say, oh my God, sit down. I've got to get you. When they found out I had no money and was just walking for peace, they would sit me down and they would run over and bring me food. And over half the time it was non-vegan stuff. And I would say, really? I deeply apologize. You know, it's okay. I expect nothing. And I'm grateful for the gesture. It's very, very kind of you. And yet I don't eat animals. I don't contribute to animal cruelty. I only eat plants. And then invariably a conversation would start. Some people got a little offended at first, you know, when you reject the gift, but I was always kind enough that almost every time it moved into some form of calm communication, respectful communication of the message. And so at some point here, another walk is knocking. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm excited about that. I don't really need to make any stickers or have any pamphlets. I just need to walk hungry. And then anytime anybody offers me non-vegan food, just give them a hug, say thanks, but no thanks. And I think I have great faith that that does something powerful. I mean, to be that consequent, which from the outside, I mean, that looks like an amazing thing. He's starving and he refused food for the animals. You know, as a vegan, and when I mean vegan, I don't mean anyone who's doing it for their personal health or to save the environment of the planet, though those are fine things. I mean someone who is vegan the way Donald Watson defined veganism, which is it's an ethical way of being. There's no way, once you go vegan, there's no way not to be vegan. Once you choose to make, you know, be a kind, just, compassionate person to all beings, it's not like you can just stop doing that. So it's not like it was ever a difficult decision, no matter how hungry I was, right? It was that option was never on the table. So it wasn't difficult at all for me, but it looked difficult, you know, and that's why I think it got through and will get through and keep getting through. I hope.
Wonderful. Thank you, Scott.
And like I say, once you start, you're well aware of it, as are all of our current vegan friends around the world. I mean, once you adopt that ethic, it's not like there's an alternative to go back. I mean, I would go crazy if I went back to harming animals just because a certain food tasted good. Even if a certain food was necessary for my health, it just is unthinkable that I would cause another being to suffer just because it was a little bit healthier for me, which of course we know it's very unhealthy to eat animals. But even if it was healthy, there are a lot of activities that are healthy for us that we have decided are inexcusable behaviors, and we're not going to engage in them as decent human beings. And harming animals should, it is high time that harming animals is on that list, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Scott. And we're coming to a close in the interview for today. What additional messages do you have for our listeners, and how can interested folk contact you?
Right. Well, contacting me is pretty easy. You can, if you Google, the failsafe is just Googling my name. It's S-C-A-U-G-H-D as in Dora, T. And by my indications, you put that in Google and I'm almost the only one, if not the only one online. You get my Facebook page, which is a public profile. You get my website, which is inspiringthealtruisticmoment.com. And my Twitter page and my Rumble and my YouTube channels. So that's the easiest way to get a hold of me. My email, if anyone wants to email me, is rediscoveringpeace@gmail.com. And when I'm walking, because Gmail tends to shut me down when I'm walking because I keep signing in from different computers and they keep thinking I've been hacked. So I have a backup, which is rediscoveringpeace99. The number's 99 at protonmail.com. So anyone who contacts me, I don't know how long it'll take me to get back to you, but I do get back to people. And the website is really filled with information that is really, really interesting and thought-provoking and hopefully inspiring. And the parting message I give, I keep it simple. It's be kind when least inclined. And that's for all sentient beings, not just for our fellow humans, which is it's really easy to be loving and caring and friendly to folks when things are going good. But it's when we're kind in difficult times towards people who are being difficult that we do real powerful good, and we shine the light that is needed to be shown. So that's what I would say.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene. It was an honor to be here.
We're listening to Scott via Skype in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Scott is a peace pilgrim and has been for decades, and a vegan activist.
Thank you so much for what you do, Marlene. Okay. Who knows, if I ever make it to Massachusetts, we can hang out.
Yes, for sure.
Cool beans.
Okay.
All right, take care, friend.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow, in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. Please join us again next week at the same time. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. This is Marlene in Massachusetts, wishing you a good day. We're listening to The Cow Song by Will Tuttle. Let's go out with a song by Ellie Sarti. Ellie is the founder of Compassion Arts. The song is Everything Comes Around. Thanks again for tuning in to Vegan Nation.
Deep in the